Cody.
Your call is being answered by Audix.
Jeremy Katz.
Is not available. To leave a message, wait for the tone. Otherwise, for assistance, press 0 now. Record at the tone.
Monkeys!
Hello, welcome to Log Radio Season 3, Episode 12, I think
episode
it is.
Episode 12?
Yes,
yeah,
it
is.
Nice one. So we've been going now for quite some time.
nice to start the show.
A dozen episodes.
Wow.
It's of Season 3. So I'm Matthew Revelle.
You are.
Oh, I'm Stuart Langridge.
You are.
Jim Appel, Adrian Bradshaw.
Wow. I'm John O'Bacon.
Nice one. What are we going to talk about this week?
Let's talk to somebody from Red Hat.
Yes,
who should we talk to?
All right. We'll talk to Jeremy Katz from Red Hat.
Should we also talk to Cliff Brereton from IBM?
What do you call a man with a seal on his head?
Yeah, we'll have a 5-minute update this week as well.
We will.
About something very new.
We'll talk about that
in a bit.
New information.
Yet again, you may hear some anti-Mac sort of sentiment from me for a change.
Yes,
really?
just for a change, and then
they push my buttons. I'm blaming them.
And then we've got a shitload of emails.
Is there anything else we talked about?
We're going to talk about by the way,
We're going to talk
to you more about Lug Radio Live. Prepare yourself, only about 4 months to go.
We're going to talk about having one desktop versus having lots of desktops.
And we've got a brilliant competition.
That's a good one as well. And there's another competition as well. You've got to, in the outro, guess which member of the Lug Radio crew is missing.
Which one could it be? Let's go.
Where's Waldo? I reckon that one of the main things that small projects find difficult to get hold of is decent quality
hose.
Bandwidth and hosting and that sort of thing.
I thought it was hose.
No.
My bad.
So what we did was we thought we'd try and help with that situation.
With the hose or the host?
With the hosts.
Just checking.
Okay. Yep. So,
cool, yeah.
You know, you might want a track server or some, you know, subversion stuff which goes under the track, or you might want a website, or but you might just want...
You're dropping some hints here, aren't you, Matt?
You might just want some kind of I don't know,
hosted
a development server. Basically, what you want is a server is what you want. In Iraq that you can do what
Not
you want.
Not in
with.
Iraq.
No, in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I reckon that the best servers come in Gloucester.
No, they don't.
Surely the fastest servers come from Gloucester.
Well, certainly Farsosis in Gloucester, my lovely employers, and they have agreed, thank you very much, Ed, to give server to the most deserving open source project. Now, what are you going
to
get?
Just give it to them.
For a year.
Oh, right.
possibly for longer.
And then take it back.
Possibly for longer, but they've guaranteed it for a year at least.
Okay.
And you don't get to see it. It lives in, you know, telehouse.
In Iraq.
No. It lives in a dedicated data centre in Gloucester.
Underneath the stairs.
No, it's very big, actually. It's quite loud.
It sits under the desk in the studio.
Yeah, but it's got a fan pointing towards it. So
yeah.
You're all right.
Hey, so what you get is, I'm not exactly sure of the spec at the moment, but it'll probably be about...
A three gig
Pentium 4, something like that, with about a gig of RAM or something like that. But I'll confirm the specs when I know exactly what they're going to be. But it'll be a fairly decent machine.
Will it have redundant fans and redundant CPU?
It won't have redundant CPU, no. But it'll be in a nice air-conditioned data center.
Fantastic.
And all that stuff.
You know.
So how can you get this free server for your project?
What have we agreed? Tell us.
We've agreed amongst ourselves, the Lug Radio boys, that we will take nominations from you chaps, the Lug Radio listeners, and anyone else who can think of a good project.
And the person who sends the most emails wins, right?
No. The person who...
Bring it on.
The project... And what we'll do is, from those nominations, we'll draw up a short list of 3 to 5 projects, which we'll then put to open vote.
Jakosha.
Now, how do you get...
Jakosha is not allowed to win.
I know, it's not going to be...
Neither is No Mime.
It's going to be exempt.
Yeah. Neither is...
What about the delicious desk bar or whatever it is that you've just written?
That should win. That needs its own server.
What about... I think K-Bald should be exempt as well.
K-Bald. It's like the Magic 8-Bald.
You were saying, Matthew.
So, what we'll do is we'll drop a shortlist. And the way that you get your project onto the shortlist is basically by being... a project that can bring something to the community, that is doing something exciting, something worthwhile. It doesn't have to be exciting, it just has to be worthwhile, actually.
Useful.
But that perhaps doesn't have loads of corporate backing or anything like that, so you can't afford your own server, or your resources would be better directed elsewhere.
Yeah. So the Apache Foundation can't apply?
No.
Canonical.
They're welcome to apply. We're probably going to say no. We're probably not going to say no to the iFolder project either, to be honest with you. You know, but if you've got a project where you think they could do, you know, you're doing some good work, and you'd like a, you want a development server, or you want a build server, or you want a web server, or you want all of the above, then you know we'd rather you didn't get it and then just IRC from it.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna ask for like an update on how you're using your server.
Can I get it and map the world from it?
No.
What is that? Minus T insane.
And just you know, you might be thinking, what do Farsos get out of it? Well, they get a mention on our fantastic show.
But we're also wearing fast host pants.
So people need to send in their submissions.
Yep. Yeah. And to show at lugradio.org.
To show at lugradio.org.
Is that them saying I submit?
Saying I submit.
Okay. Send in your submissions then.
And then we're going to pick the
shortlist.
The shortlist of the worthy submissions, and then we're going to make it open to the public vote.
Yeah, and just, you know, it'd be nice if you do get the server, you could put a link to Farsos on your website or something.
Yeah,
just,
reasonable. And LeGrady. No, whatever.
Keep sending them in.
Keep sending them
and,
in.
And we'll keep you updated on the next show.
Yes, indeed.
We will.
Okay, on the line now we've got Cliff Brereton from IBM. So,
hello,
how are you doing, Cliff?
Hey, Jono. Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you.
Good. Right, we're in the studio. You're in the studio with Ak, Matt, and Aid.
Hi, hey, guys.
And
hello.
So, what do you do at IBM then, Cliff?
Well, my job's quite simple, Jono. My role is working within our systems and technology group, and principally, I'm the evangelist that talks to large and small enterprises about adopting Linux and open source.
Fantastic. And and what kind of projects do you mainly work on?
Well, I work within our server group, so principally I look at projects that start within organisations that are pretty straightforward, like file and print and firewalls.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing more often now is people adopting more serious and weighty applications on Linux because they've had great experience around performance and reliability when they've done the infrastructure projects.
Cool. Did you say being an evangelist is really simple?
It is. It's only, well, relatively simple in so much as on the server layer within people's architectures, there isn't this kind of emotional hang-up that you get with people looking at Linux and open source on the desktop.
For a desktop, sure, yeah.
Servers kind of sit behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
But really what our customers tell us is that they like the kind of performance, the reliability, the fact that Linux just runs.
Yeah, the uptime.
So it's quite often relatively straightforward to overcome any concerns they might have on that front.
Fantastic. Now, I'm guessing from your accent, you're based in the UK?
I am indeed, yep. Okay. I'm based in Manchester.
Based in Manchester, eh? Okay. Matthew, I believe you got a question.
Oh, was that the sum total of your question? Are you based in Manchester?
I just wanted to clarify for our users where he was based.
Oh, great, okay.
Our users?
How techie are we? We call our listeners users. Anyway, Cliff Meal
trying
to play.
They're addicted to us.
What's, you know, this whole kind of IBM and open source thing? Do you reckon it's a chance for IBM to perhaps regain some of the ground lost to Microsoft over the years?
Well, that's a good question. I think certainly if we look at the Linux and open source evolution, certainly in the time that I've been involved in it at IBM, is that in the early days, the Linux and open source debate, and to a lesser or greater extent, the battle, was very much with Microsoft. And that was about the time of the server layer that Microsoft were end-of-lifing NT4.
Yeah.
So Ray. People were considering things like Samba and Open LDAP standards for an alternative to moving to Server 2003.
Yeah.
Now, certainly from what we've seen is that kind of battle at the server level with Microsoft kind of ended about 2 years ago when customers really had made a decision. They either moved to Linux or open source, or they moved across to Microsoft 2003.
Yeah.
So very much at the moment, we're seeing that in the enterprise space, and certainly at the server layer, the debate is Unix versus Linux.
Yes.
And that's much more the topical debate that's going on at this moment in time.
AIX.
What about
AIX? Now, obviously IBM's a pretty large organization, and it must be difficult at times, one side of IBM fully understanding the other side, because there's so many people working there. Have you found that Linux adoption at IBM has been a simple thing, or that it's been difficult to propagate through different bits of IBM's sort of global services?
Okay, well, that's a good question. Firstly, I think one way to look at this is that IBM is a great user of Linux and open source software. So
yeah.
So that goes right away from our manufacturing plants, where the manufacturing
right.
systems actually use Linux and open source, through to some of the back office applications that we use. So IBM is a very big user itself of Linux. So that overcomes some of the barriers to familiarity with the use of Linux and open source software anyway. But certainly what we did at the outset is when we made our large investment back in 99-2000 in enabling our server and software group products, and that's all of them, to run
yeah.
Linux, immediately that gave some focus to those areas. So right the way from server through to software through to global services, there's pretty much a very keen awareness and promotion of Linux in the marketplace. Now, one
yeah.
of the things that Linux and open source has done for us is it's enabled us to give a lot of choice to customers.
Mm.
A lot of customers still come to us and say, look, I want a completely proprietary solution.
AIX.
Those are actual words.
Give me a proprietary solution.
That may be around ZOS if it's a mainframe solution, or it may be around Microsoft if it's around our x86 products.
Right.
But certainly what we have seen is the introduction of Linux and some of the benefits of that has brought has actually brought an awful lot of new life into some of the server ranges that we have.
Right.
You know, for example, the mainframe now is a very pertinent product around
really?
Linux, where customers are taking a mainframe machine and perhaps not using it in the same way that traditionally we might think about using a mainframe, but subdividing a machine up into hundreds, if not thousands, of virtualized servers that can be turned on and turned off. And at the same time, because they're virtual servers, removing some of the need for, you know, quite expensive software licenses.
I suppose, yeah.
Right.
We've certainly seen some new life in some of the products that way.
Before I move on to my next question proper...
Oh, you get two questions,
do you? I do get two questions, yeah. What was the deal with those bloody small boy adverts, and did they actually do any good for IBM?
M&M, yeah.
Oh, that was Linux. His name is Linux.
Oh,
I think it helped get a little bit of awareness out there.
I think it did. Visibility.
What we tried to do with our particular market campaign, if you remember, the little boy popped up in all sorts of destinations all over the world. So I think that little guy got to see the world before he was 10.
Wicked.
But certainly the whole message behind that was Linux is everywhere. And I think it did get some resonance out in the marketplace.
Yeah, I just didn't understand. I'm sure I saw it in the middle of Coronation Street once. I was thinking, why would my nan want to see this? But anyway, let's move on. That's the past. That's gone. Simon Phipps from Sun, he was on the show a couple of weeks back, and he mentioned, which we knew already, I suppose, that IBM's a major contributor to OpenOffice. My tone in my voice has gone all weird there. I sang that. Anyway, who cares?
Shut up and get on
with it. The question is, what sort of ongoing future contribution to the Linux desktop do you reckon we'll see from IBM? Do you think we'll see...
If any.
More... Well, yeah, if any. Do you think we'll see a case where when I'm sitting at home doing just kind of consumery things, I may be able to be using quite a significant bit of IBM code, or is that not what you guys are about?
Yeah, I think it certainly is what we're about. Where
really?
Where you'll see IBM, where you won't see IBM is where we work in the background. What we've got within our Linux technology centres, and these are dotted all around the world, is 600 full-time developers working on the Linux kernel, open source projects, and
wow.
basically packing out code, which is going to be used in significant projects that IBM and others might use. Now, one of the fundamental tenets that we have within our business is that collaboration drives innovation. What
yeah.
we recognized is that no matter how much a large organization like IBM with money and people can throw at a particular project, if we open the project up to others' eyes working on it, others' hands working on that project as well, then we quickly speed the development of that project and get it to market much quicker. So with things like, I'll give you an example here. If you take Eclipse, for example, that was that originally started off as an IBM project.
Really?
It was a piece of IBM software as an IBM tool. We took it to a certain stage, but then realized that if we opened up the development of that particular piece of software and that software tooling to others to work on, then suddenly the development of that project would be accelerated X-fold.
Hold the advantage
of
open source.
We could take the benefit from IBM, and others could as well. So with Eclipse, which I think we spent somewhere around about $50 million internally developing Eclipse, we then handed it across to the open source community, and now we have Eclipse.org. And there's all sorts of players in there, including the HPs of this world, including the Suns of this world, working on Eclipse, plus general open source developers. And the project has moved ahead so fast now that we couldn't have kept up with it just putting the money in that we did or putting the development time in that we did. So I think you'll continually see whole bunches of code being done around the kernel, around open source applications that are derived from these 600 developers, but also done in collaboration with the general open source marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just a quick question. Everything you're saying there about collaboration, that's absolutely excellent. And opening up things and how you get better product out of it and so on. As Matt mentioned, we had Simon Phipps on a few weeks ago, and he said that he expected all of Sun software to be open source in the next few years. Are we likely to see a similar commitment from IBM? Or failing that, I mean, can you take some of the old software that you're not selling anymore and make it open source, like ViaVoice, which would be very useful? I mean, IBM's got this huge bank of software. Are we likely to see some of that making its way out of the vaults and into the world again?
Well, that's a great question, and in fact, we're already doing that, and I've been doing that for quite some time. I mentioned Eclipse there, but a whole bunch of our voice technologies we opened up to the open source community about a year ago now. In addition to that, things like, and it's not just old stuff that we're putting out to the open source community because, you know, we don't think there's a market anymore or we don't want to develop it anymore. We're actually sending, you know, much newer stuff and latest state-of-the-art stuff out to open source community. And that kind of stuff is witnessed by things like patents. You know, we've put out an awful lot of patents now to the open source community. So such that these latest developments can be picked up and used and developed further by open source community members.
Cheers.
Okay, excellent. Thanks so much for talking
Brilliant.
To us. That's absolutely fantastic. And we'd love to have you on again to tell us more about what's going on at IBM.
That'd be super. I'd look forward to that.
Yeah, excellent.
Cheers, Cliff.
Thanks
so much. Cheers, Cliff.
Cheers, Cliffo.
Bye.
Hey, sail boy. What's that over there?
Oh, it appears to be the... What the fuck book truck?
Welcome to the What the Fuck book truck.
How old
it's me, isn't it?
I've been sitting here with this book on my lap all evening.
It's the What the Fuck book truck.
It's time to shine.
Book
truck.
So this episode on the truck.
On the truck. With us we have...
What's the book?
We have Just for Fun by a certain man you may know as... Linus Torvalds.
Pronounced as...
Linus Torvalds.
Tuvels.
Linus.
Linus Torvalds.
Yeah,
it's not Russian.
Linus Torvalds Olic. It's the only International Space Station. Anyway, like Matthew, I don't actually read many books. However,
I read books.
But someone glued your index finger back on this week, so you're okay.
When I say that, I've actually got two bookshelves full of books, but they're all like...
adult literature.
Yeah, that's right. No, they're all like Bind and PHP, loads of O'Reilly stuff.
Boom.
I never actually read books, if you
like
know what
say,
I mean. They're always
adult
manuals.
Literature.
Thank you very, very much.
Or RFC.
Oh, baby.
Oh, Bind.
You can get an RFC, it's printed out in like... anyway.
On satin sheets.
On Lulu.com.
I thought it made sense to read Just for Fun by Linus Torvalds. He's the man who started it all.
Was it fun?
Well, he started some of it.
He started Linux. You've got to give him that bit.
Good on him.
No, he didn't.
I'm not taking it away from him.
Or was it Andrew Tandenbaum? Minix.
Tandbum. Andrew Tandbum.
No, it's actually...
Tandbum.
It's written from the point of view of like a guy's gone over to like interview him over several sort of months and goes off on little days out with him and stuff like that. And obviously it goes right the way back to the beginning when he sort of got his first computer, VIC-20. It's actually his grandfather who got it. And how he got into programming, and then it goes on to him buying his first 386 computer, installing Minix on it, and learning to program, writing a program just so he could learn the processor and how it works.
So it covers how he kind of got into hacking code?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, cool.
It kind of every geek can sort of can identify with the guy because he's, you know,
he started off with a fucking VIC 20.
Well, no, because he's kind of like days just disappear as he's just coding in front of the computer and like, you know, just food or, and
the
sleep
life
are like
slips
just
away.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, at one point his mum was really concerned that he's never going to meet a girl because, like, you know, all he does is sleep and program.
And then, you know, 1990 or so rolled around, he discovered IRC.
And all he does now is hack code and satisfy Jeff Waugh's perverse pleasures to see Linus Torvalds dunked in a massive kind of
was
wheelie
that,
bit.
Was that Jeff who did that?
Well, I think he's part of the whole linux.conf. Linux.conf.
He actually did that dunking thing because he didn't want to give his first speech.
That donkey thing.
He didn't want to really do a speech, so he thought, well, I'll turn up and you can just do, like, dunk the Linus Torvalds or whatever.
Yeah. As much as I think Linus Torvalds is really cool, he doesn't look particularly great in Speedos.
He was a bit of a...
I have never seen him in Speedos, yeah, by the way.
From the dunking.
I haven't seen that picture.
I'll tell you what, you think, yeah, Linus Torvalds, you know, the father of our movement, he's a bit of a pie eater.
The point in the book, Stormin actually says the reason that Linus has been such a good spokesman for free software is he looks less odd than most hackers.
He hasn't got those twisted fingers. I can't hear you!
Great, big, massive beard.
You mean
he
hasn't got a wanking claw.
Did you see what the email he sent to John Leach?
The book.
What? Torvalds?
Yeah.
I did read it. What was it
something
again?
Like, you know, basically, changing your mind, that's called intelligence.
That's called intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book's really interesting. It comes across as, and I don't know how much of this is just like how they're painting him, but he comes across as somebody who's like not really been affected by all the fame and all the living in Silicon Valley and all the rest of it.
He doesn't apparently seem to have been. No, sort of, you know, he gets to drive around in a convertible car and people ring him up a lot and stuff. But
he seems really family orientated. Yeah. He doesn't live in a great big massive castle or anything
like
that.
He's just a guy who loves fortune out of it. I mean,
he's not short of a bobber.
No, not at all. But it's interesting to hear it. Like Bill Gates, at one point, somebody asked him what he'd say to Bill Gates if he ever met him, and he said, I don't think we'd ever meet, to be honest, because we've got nothing in common. I can't give him any advice on his business. He certainly can't give me any useful advice on my business.
Yeah.
There really isn't any point in us meeting.
Mm. That's the thing. Thought, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's nice that to see things. I mean, I've not read the book, but from knowing
you
about
Torvalds, mate,
I'd love to. From knowing about him, you know, it's nice to see that someone's retained their original values throughout this insane thing.
It goes through the part like in sort of the early 90s where it's starting to pick up momentum and everyone in the news groups is getting really worried because like companies like IBM are getting on board and everyone's sort of, oh no, it's all going to go bad now. He's going to sell out. We'll never see him again sort of thing. So yeah, it goes through all of that kind of era.
And now, you know,
it's really, really good read.
It's mad. I mean, you get the impression he isn't hugely affected by the fame. By the fact that he's quite introvert, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, he only does like one or two talks. You know, I mean, he must get invited. You know, 10,
I think
15
he does more talks now,
to things.
But he does go through like his first talk and how nervous he was on the night before and all the rest of it. Mm.
But you know, I mean,
I think he's just not interested.
Yeah,
he wants to write code. And
he's got three beautiful kids. Got a beautiful wife. Loves coding.
He wants to harden the nipples of geeks everywhere.
I mean, there's kind of a tradition of knocking your heroes a bit. And I've seen a few people say that they can't quite believe that he's quite as self-effacing and,
and as
uninterested as he is. But I think maybe he is. I don't think it's a pose.
No.
You know, for which he gets a certain amount of respect. And the book really brings... I've read Just For Fun.
Mm.
And the book does really bring that out.
At least someone has read it. So,
thank you.
I would like to say, though, that he's actually a wanker.
Why?
Because he likes KDE, not Gnome.
No.
But we need to not have that fight again. I'm bored of it.
Not because of that. No. He's a wanker because I sent him an email about speaking at Lug Radio Live. I didn't hear anything back.
You've got to fax him.
You've got to fax him.
Yeah, that's the deal. If you read Just For Fun, it says in there he responds best to faxes because you've had to make a bit of an effort to get in touch with him if you fax him.
We'd love him to come to Lug Radio Live.
Yeah, come on, about it. About 30 seconds ago, you pointed out that he gets invited to speak somewhere 10 or 15 times a day.
Yep.
Right? So you'd have just been invite number 11 on the day it arrived.
I know. It's fine most of the time. I mean, you know, for invites 1 to 10 is fine, but ours is wanker. And it's fine. No, I'm merely jesting. He's a solid bloke, as Linus Torvalds. So tell us. So
he looks it in that picture.
He is. He's had a salad dodging. Solid bloke.
So tell us, is there anything else about the book that stands out in your bald mind?
I think I've pretty much covered it, Johnny.
You've pretty much covered it. So this is the last episode of The Trook.
What a shame.
Well, episode five of four.
If you want to send in your reviews, we'll probably ignore them.
No, seriously, they could send in their reviews on the old telephone line. Send them in on the telephone and
08709 31 and some other numbers.
1730.
And we'll see you some other time on The Trook.
It won't be the last time we see the book Trook, will it?
I'm assuming we're going to get someone else to at least take a ride on the Trook. I'm sure there's going to be lots of other open source related
big run-along,
vehicular devices.
The
free software submarine.
the Christ on a bike.
What about the Hackercopter?
Okay, we've got Jeremy Katz from Red Hat on the phone.
Really?
How are you doing, Jeremy?
Pretty good.
Good, good.
Hi, Jeremy.
So you're here to talk about Fedora.
Yep.
So tell us about what you do at Red Hat and why Fedora's cool.
So I do a variety of things at Red Hat. I lead a lot of the work that goes on Anaconda, which is the installer for Fedora.
Yeah.
I've been involved in our work on Xen for the past year and a little bit now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I also just sort of help to guide everything Fedora that we do within Red Hat.
Cool.
Cool. So you guys have just shoved out Fedora Core 5. What's new in 5 and why should our non-Fedora using listeners be interested?
Well, there's the obvious of, with every release, there's always the new release of all of the desktop environments.
Sure, yeah.
There's always a new desktop environment release. Newer cool features are we've got better integration with Xen and actually making it so that you can easily install a Xen guest just like it's, you know, a regular physical machine.
Cool, yeah.
Kind of nice. We have included some new applications such as Tomboy, Beagle, F-Spot, and F-Spot, which use Mono.
Yeah.
Cool.
New versions of GCJ and GCC so that we can actually support more of the Java stack on a free Java-like environment.
It all sounds pretty good, and there's the reviews initially seem fairly favorable in terms of
people seem pretty happy so far. We're pushing lots of bits right now.
The other thing
it
seems like Fedora's got quite a cool image, sort of an interesting kind of, it's not just this bastardized offset of Red Hat anymore.
No.
And it's become its own thing.
Yeah, we've definitely spent a lot of time trying to make that the case.
Now, one question I'd like to ask is, obviously, like I've just said, you know, I mean, this is something that's come from Red Hat, and Red Hat have got an input in it for the fact that you work on it, you know, as an example. So how many people at Red Hat are working on Fedora, and how many people are contributors?
It's hard to say an exact number. Basically, every developer within Red Hat ends up having at least, you know, some contribution to Fedora, especially those who own packages, because we have the same package owner own the package in Fedora, as well as for our more commercial products.
Right.
Then there are also all the various people that work on upstream projects that we then pull into Fedora. So everybody pretty much gets involved.
Cool. Now, one thing I've been wondering about is, obviously, Ubuntu has come up fairly quickly.
Yep.
In some circles, it's synonymous with Linux almost these days.
Yep.
How does that make Red Hat and Fedora in particular feel? Because, I mean, obviously, Red Hat was the Linux distribution in many people's eyes, and now for whatever reason Ubuntu has kind of perhaps taken that place. How do you guys feel about that, and does it matter even?
I think that really it's more of the growing the Linux user base more than, you know, you steal a little from Peter to give to Paul, but all in all it just gives more positive buzz around Linux. And
yeah,
you know, over the years there's always the new distribution, and everybody's always excited about the new thing.
Yeah.
And So it's not something that, you know, I really, you know, I keep an eye on what they're doing because they do some cool stuff. And, hey, we want to work with them and try and make the cool stuff work for everybody, you know, for our users and their users.
Cool. I mean, that's a creditable way to look at things, it has to be said. I mean, what do you think that distributions could be doing to work together better? I mean, you've seen people set up, you know, United Linux and things like that, kind of umbrella organizations.
Yeah.
And obviously the developers are all talking. Yeah, but do you think you need some kind of join between distributions or some way of better cooperating?
I think that it mostly has to be done at the individual project level, and that, you know, a lot of things, like one of the things that we've done in Fedora Core 5 is adding some of the initial infrastructure to really be able to nicely start supporting Suspend and Hibernation on laptops.
Yeah,
And Ubuntu's also been putting a lot of work into this.
Absolutely.
And so we each have our set of scripts that do things slightly differently, which is good because, you know, our distributions are different. But what we really want to cooperate on is, you know, the database, the information about the different hardware quirks and, you know, that this ThinkPad needs to have this done and that this HP laptop needs something else and this Dell laptop needs something else. And so working with projects like HAL to actually get that information there where everybody can use it in their infrastructure of scripts.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what kind of... You say that you'd like to work with other distributors a lot more, but what actual things are going on? I mean, for example, you know, you talked just there about Suspend. I mean, you know, how is this collaboration actually happening? Because fundamentally, surely... Much of the same technology is in Ubuntu. Much of the same technology is in Red Hat. It just seems ever so slightly different. And while you've got Matthew Garrett from Canonical has got a stack of 45 laptops that he constantly getting this stuff working, there's guys that... and I've heard great reviews about the Hibernate Suspend stuff.
Yeah, they've done a lot of...
In Fedora is astonishing. So, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of exactly the same technology between the two.
Well, the thing is, you have to start out somewhere, and as it happens, the starting out somewhere usually ends up being the let's get something working, and then once you have that, so we've been talking with our David Zoyten, who's the upstream HAL maintainer and who works at Red Hat, and Matthew have been talking about how to get some of that information that's currently in, you know, this pile of shell scripts into FDI files that are in HAL so that everybody can take advantage of the information.
Yeah.
And so we're working to try and make that happen for both of our next releases so that, you know, we can say, hey, you know, if you have hardware and you want to help make it supported, then you just need to have this simple XML file in HAL.
Yep.
And then everybody gets it.
Right. One thing that you might not be able to discuss, but I'll ask it anyway, is you mentioned that one of the things in Fedora Core 5 is Beagle, for example, and you mentioned a few other mono projects. From what I understand, Red Hat has a pretty anti-mono stance, or at least it's declared that mono won't be going into enterprise server or anything like that. How does that sit then between the two projects, being as though, like you say, many of the Fedora people are Red Hat employees?
Yeah. As of right now, you know, the way that our enterprise products works is that we evaluate new technology in Fedora. And, you know, in that vein, we're evaluating mono.
Right, yeah.
I can't really go a lot more into detail.
Fair enough.
Yeah, as you expected.
Okay, yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, I understand that, absolutely. Recently, we've seen a large bunch of people move to the Mac from Windows and potentially some from Linux as well. What would you say to Mac users to convince them to use Fedora Core 5?
At this point, the Linux desktop is not where the Mac desktop is.
Yep.
But if you're, you know, a more advanced user and, you know, you don't mind having to tinker occasionally, you know, we're starting to get there. Some of the technologies are starting to be, you know, as integrated. We have a much harder time because, you know, the breadth of hardware that Linux works on is just so much greater than that of a Mac.
Right. Okay. And just like a last question, obviously Red Hat has set the standard in many people's minds for a long time, as I mentioned earlier. So now you've got things like CentOS and Whitebox Linux and that coming along, who are basically creating a free equivalent, free of charge equivalent, of your paid-for product. How do Red Hat see that, and
is there a strategy to add more value to your for your paying customers?
Well, I mean, the source is out there. We abide by the licenses of what we ship, and we don't see it as a bad thing.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, what sort of things can you do to make sure the Red Hat stays afloat as a company?
Well, so, I mean, the thing is, if you go with, say, a CentOS install, then you don't have the support. Backing of the Red Hat support organization.
Yeah.
But surely only a small number of people would be able to, or organizations would be able to afford or need that. Am I right, or am I...
That's the business.
Actually, a lot of, you know, we obviously have lots of customers who find it very valuable.
Yeah, oh, great. Yeah, obviously, yeah. It's just, I don't know, just
shit-stirring.
It just interests me to know how you know, what you guys think about all of that. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, there are a lot of people, you know, one way of looking at it is, you know, these people want to use something, but, you know,
it's supported.
They're cheap.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to spend money. And, you know, having a way for them to be using something that is very much like a Red Hat product is a good thing.
Oh, cool.
And I suppose it means that, you know, there's room in the pond for everyone. If you don't want to pay any money, you know, you don't have to. But if you do want services, you can buy them from Red Hat.
So. I suppose
you know, how many servers are there in the world right now? How many of them are not running Linux, which is still an astonishingly high number?
There's five, I think.
There's a big pie there.
Yeah.
No, we like big pie.
An enormous, enormous, hopefully carrot-flavoured pie. thanks ever so much for coming on the show. We know it was pretty short notice to
Cheers,
get you chaps
man.
On.
And yes, we, thank you very much.
And we really appreciate that. You know, keep up the great work. It's evident that Fedora gets cooler with every new release.
We do our best.
That's what we want. And just work a bit harder.
Oh, okay, I won't leave till midnight tonight.
Oh, and don't forget to check your voicemail.
Okay.
Cheers, thanks
a lot.
Take
Bye.
Care.
Thank you very much.
Earlier in the show, Jeremy Katz said this.
At this point, the Linux desktop is not where the Mac desktop is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. Not everybody, I appreciate it, but I think a lot of people would say that the Mac desktop is easier to use and it's more integrated.
Oh, you don't think it's easier
to use?
Tied
together. No, okay, no, I understand that, absolutely. Don't get me wrong.
With his massive Mac experience.
Yeah.
People with hair do think.
I have at least used MacOS.
No, hang on, hang on, right. Let's fix the point I wanted to make is this. Based on my 5 minutes of research on the internet, right?
On the what?
Apple have got 13,000 employees.
Okay.
Now, Red Hat have got 740.
Mm-hmm.
IBM have got 7,500 devoted to Linux.
Woo!
Novell have 6,100 in total, and a reasonable portion of them must be devoted to Linux.
Right.
And Sun have 35,000 in total.
Not all.
Not all devoted to Linux, but some of the ones who aren't devoted to Linux are still devoted to things that will help the Linux desktop, like GNOME, for example. So I would say there are probably about as many employees there as Apple have got.
Okay.
So my question is this: why is Linux not as good on the desktop?
I have a guess.
That's a very simplistic way of measuring it, though.
It is a very simplistic way.
They're not all doing the same
thing. Hang on,
he didn't say it was better. He just said it's not where the Mac is.
No, absolutely. I mean, my point is...
I think that basically translates as not as good.
I think he was implying there, he was suggesting that the Linux desktop isn't as good as the Mac desktop.
But it's more powerful than he said later on.
He said if you're a more advanced user who doesn't mind twiddling with things.
He didn't say twiddling with things.
He did, basically.
Let's not get into that.
He basically said if you're a more advanced user, then the Linux desktop
is
fine.
Means if you're a power user. But the point is that Apple have a desktop that is generally regarded, outside of your house, to be more easy to use than something like GNOME, right? So why is that when there are apparently more people working on the Linux desktop than working on the Apple
There are more
desktop.
People working on Linux.
On Linux
I'm not stipulating that all the people working on Linux working on the Linux desktop, a lot of them working
you
on the
server.
You
should really
have
the number of people working on desktops. Like you've got GNOME, the community KDE. As well, though, haven't you?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, exactly.
Apple are a reasonably big firm. They've got 13,000 employees, absolutely. But... they're not that massive. They've managed to put together a really quite tight and decent product, and the Linux community haven't. And I'm
it's because
not,
have,
it's not as good. And I'm curious as to why you think it is.
Can I hazard a guess?
I know why I think it is, but I don't.
I think it's not just about manpower. If you throw a lot of developers at a problem,
That's one thing, yeah? You can achieve, if you give those developers a goal to achieve, they can get it done quicker than if you throw half as many developers at the problem, okay?
Well, Brooks would disagree with you, but I'll stipulate that's the case for
whatever,
the moment,
yeah, okay. Right, but the difference, I think, is that essentially a lot of this is about design by committee. And that's part of the problem. With Apple,
yes,
they'll develop a design for an operating system,
that's exactly,
and then they'll
what
tell their
say.
Developers to do it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how many developers you've got.
You've got one very tight team, all focused on going in the same direction.
And you can also, you can see, you can see this as well in certain open source projects where they've got a clear roadmap about what they want to do. They typically develop quicker than projects where they're kind of dangling around in the dark, don't really know where they're going.
Jacosha.
The one thing about the one thing about Apple is that they know exactly what they wanted to do. They researched it, they designed it, and yep, they got their developers to implement
research
it.
Right,
and
now,
design.
Now
you
exactly,
see, R&D.
That's almost exactly what I would have said. They've basically got one strong leader at the top who does the design, everyone else just implements that one design. And all three of you, I think, are agreeing with that
yes,
theory there. Yeah, so my question is this. Is being open source harming the Linux desktop?
Linux. We wouldn't have a Linux desktop if it wasn't for open source.
Would we have a better Linux desktop if everyone agreed to just stop fighting and line up behind one guy? Yeah, it's not the way open probably source works at the moment.
I think in the same way that the world would be a better place if no one died of AIDS. Yes, you know, of course it'd be better. If everybody basically...
Do you really think so?
If everybody basically...
Not the AIDS thing, obviously.
No, I mean, I'm not talking about... If there was a way, it could be open source. And
but so you had a choice of one desktop.
Hang on a second. If it was a way that it was open source, but the desktop, be it KDE or GNOME, let's assume for a second that it was two main desktops. But if basically people could work together to get things done, I think it would be better.
It would be shit.
No, it wouldn't.
If you had a choice of one desktop, like the Apple users, they've got a choice
never
of one.
Never said one desktop. But if you take each desktop, if you take, for example, GNOME, right?
I love the fact we've got so much choice and variety.
We have. But if you take, for example, GNOME, and right, then you take that community, and they're working together to create one desktop,
yep,
there's still lots and lots of...
duplicated effort.
There's lots of noise in the pipe, essentially, but you know where the developers working together. Even within a specific desktop, there's not a single clear vision. Now this is slightly different, I'd say, with KDE. They've defined themselves a vision for KDE 4, and that's largely due to, I'd say, Saigo. But it's great that we've got so much choice. But at some point, choice is a bad thing when you don't get anywhere with it.
No, I mean, I think the thing Aid's saying there, the choice is really good, and I agree with you. I think the fact that we have that choice is vitally important.
Yes.
It really is. However, I think I would say that we would have better Linux desktops if everyone agreed to walk in the same direction. Or everyone said, right, I'm not going to fork this project, yeah, or fight against it. Yeah. I am going to line up behind this guy and who leads the project and do what he says regardless of whether I agree. I'm not necessarily sure that would make it a better world, but I think it would make better desktops.
Do you not think the thing that's important is not that there is choice, but the fact that you are able to have choice? So if everyone consented willingly to say, right, we'll work together because... If we pool our resources, we will make something better. Then, because of the licensing, at least if it all goes to pot, you can still fork that or create something else.
I understand your theory, but on day number two, some guy will say it's all gone to pot and fork the project, which is exactly what we've got at the moment.
But hopefully he'll just be
as
a tin
gets
pot
bigger and more people get involved. Then more people will get involved in the GNOME project, more people get involved in KDE. So you'll have more people working on that project. And as long as that project stays in one direction.
But that's the thing. Yeah. You're making the assumption there that just because it's GNOME, just because it's KDE, they're heading in the same direction. That isn't what happens.
Right.
The one thing is that
seems
I noticed when,
well
I,
so
when,
far.
When I moved my desktop from KDE to GNOME, one of the most attractive aspects of it was the fact that they seem to be a lot more together in their direction. One thing I thought of recently...
And they'll be together again.
One thing I thought of recently is that if you look at the two major desktops, right, they seem to remain cool and doing the right thing. And they alternate every so often. So I think KDE had it, and then they started losing it a little bit, and then GNOME had the ball, and they were really organized and going in the right direction. And then now it seems like it's possibly switching back to KDE a little bit more with KDE 4.
In your humble
Here's
opinion.
This is my opinion, yeah.
It is a controversial point. Well, it might not be. You might be. Really. Who knows? Let's find
That's
out when I say it.
I'm asleep.
Isn't the Linux desktop less advanced, let's say, than Apple's desktop? Because basically Apple's created by, as you say, there's a strong guy at the front who isn't a developer necessarily.
You said the Apple desktop's more advanced.
Hang on, just I said let's say,
oh, okay,
for the purposes of this. It's led by a strong design ethic and all that, whereas KDE and GNOME is just a bunch of self-indulgent hobbyists.
No, because companies are involved. In
not when Novell. Well, the point is that
organisations have got customers.
If you look at Red Hat, Red Hat have 740 employees, all of whom are devoted to the Red Hat operating system because that's what they're employed for.
Yep, yep,
These are not guys who just wander in and think, "Oh, I might do a little bit of stuff today to do with Linux." These are guys who are paid full time to work on Red Hat Linux. So that's a consistent direction, not a bunch of hobbyists.
Yep, so the point is then, it's nothing to do with the fact that it's Linux. It's just that Apple happen to have got a model that produces a certain result, and Red Hat or whoever and all these other companies haven't got that same model. Not that it's Linux, it's just that there are car companies out there who produce very specific things, and there are other car companies who don't get it quite right.
I think the fact is that the one thing that Apple have done is they had a team of people work together, I'd assume a reasonably small team of people, work together to design an operating system, and then more people to implement the operating system. And it happened that operating system pushed the right buttons for a lot of people. You know, they were successful with it. They designed, and to be fair to them, Mac OS X, I know Aid's going to spontaneously combust when I say this, but to be fair to them, Mac OS X is a good operating system. And they've created a good, solid product. And
it's
not
intuitive, though.
Lots of other people disagree with you.
That's a matter of opinion, and it's all personal choices.
Of course,
but they've created an impressive product, and they've created an innovative product.
I think it's less by chance than maybe you make out.
I think the fact is that
you're underestimating the fact that it's shiny has made a big difference to its success.
But that's part of innovation, isn't it?
What?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why. It's not as if Apple have the magic shiny key and no one else can do shiny stuff. You know, Linux could have been just someone could have sat down in 2000 or 1999. Like, presumably, someone at Apple sat down and went, "We're going to make a really shiny operating system based on Unix."
Yeah,
and someone could have done that for Linux, and nobody did. And someone could have done it for Linux in 2002 once they'd seen Mac OS X, and nobody did. Even if you think, even if you sneer a bit at shininess, it gets some users.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was at South by Southwest, and there were hundreds, thousands of people there, and at the interactive bit, and lots of them had laptops. And while I was there, I saw half a dozen Windows laptops, and I saw two Linux laptops, mine and a guy's running KDE, and every other one was a Macintosh. Now, admittedly, they're orange sunglass wearing, you know, web bastards.
Don't give in to that crap.
There must be
some reason more than just that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Every one of those people, they don't like Windows, and they could have been Linux users, and they're not. Why?
But the other thing I'd say that you've got to bear in mind is that if you look at Linux now and you compare it to 5 years ago, Linux now is much more of a desktop-orientated operating system. You know, 5 years ago, it was a case of, it was a pain in the ass to just mount a floppy disk. You had to mount a floppy disk.
Yes.
Yep.
And shit like that was a real pain in the ass. And I think the difference is that developers have matured. If you look at since the beginning of open source, when I say matured, I mean an appreciation of what users want. Because in the early days, I remember battling with developers when I was involved with KDE, certain developers, certainly not all developers, about what I considered what users want and what they considered what users wanted. And back then it was a case of, wouldn't it be great if you could edit configuration files and automatically commit them to CVS and shit like that. You know, it was much more technical requirements, whereas nowadays open source developers seem to have much more of an appreciation of usability, of design, of testing, of collaborating with other people because the community's matured. And that's the reason why I think we've got a better desktop today, is that it's kind of evolutionary in some ways, is that developers learn from each other. And we needed people like Havok Pennington and people like Jeff Waugh and Aaron Saigo and Hans Reiser and various other people to push it forward and say, this is what we need to do, you know?
Yes.
And Apple have got people like that, and they can make that decision and pay other people to implement that decision.
I bet you as well, the people who are leading the OS X project aren't all developers. I bet you
Definitely.
There's a lot of designers, there's a lot of, you know, usability experts and everything, whereas at the moment, within the open source world, it still is very developer-led, which is no bad thing.
Yeah.
But, like you say, you've got to have people,
and there's only
developers
been
who see the other side.
There's only been an appreciation, I'd say, a solid appreciation of design and usability in the open source community, I'd say, in the last 2 or 3 years. That's where it's really kicked off. So yeah, so manpower seems to be part of it, but direction and community collaboration, I suppose, is a good and a bad thing.
Okay, in our breaking news segment, we've got Jeremy Katz back on the phone.
For a 5-minute update.
For a quick update. How you doing, Jeremy?
About the same.
That's good.
The office has gotten a couple degrees warmer. I don't know why, but,
good, good. Well, you just sent us an email after the interview pointing us to a blog post about something called the Open Innovation Network.
The Open Invention Network.
Open Invention Network. I misread it.
Good job we got it from the cat's mouth.
From the cat's mouth. So tell us what it's all about and why it's incredibly cool and how it basically indemnifies the question about mono from earlier on.
Yeah, so the Open Invention Network was formed in, announced in early November. And basically it's IBM, Novell, Philips, Red Hat, and Sony trying to work together and actually, because one of the things about patents is you have to have them to defend against other patents. So basically trying to work together within the open source community. So basically the announcement was then and there was very little said other than, hey, this exists.
Okay.
And in the April 2006 edition of Linux Magazine, Mark Webbink, who is Red Hat's deputy chief counsel, I think, now, basically has an article on OIN. And basically, there's a great quote, which is, the OIN Commons is created by having all participants in OIN, whether members or licensees, cross-license any owned patents that affect the Linux kernel, key components in any Linux distribution, Linux-related applications.
Super. Oh, I see.
Okay.
And the initial list of covered applications includes Mono.
Yes.
Right, I see. So it's essentially you can work fine with you can put Mono into Red Hat things because you're cross-licensing patents with Novell through the OIN.
Yeah, it's basically, and it's a little bit my understanding, which I'm vague and on the outside and have had nothing to do with any of the OIN stuff.
No preparation.
That, it's actually a little bit different than normal patent cross-licensing.
Cool. Just a quick question. I mean, this is fantastic news, obviously.
Yeah.
If you got the major Linux distributors
and
could all work together, and Philips, to do these things.
And Sony.
And Sony. Don't forget Sony.
That's mental.
Sony, and you got Sony involved, which is magnificent.
Is that open plate and some rootkits?
A quick question. I mean, that helps Red Hat ship Mono and so on. Does it help ordinary Linux users to build distributions? Or do you have to be part of the OIN to kind of get to play?
And how do you become part of the OIN?
This is where it gets into murky, ask your lawyer questions.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, I appreciate that this is coming at you a bit out of nowhere. I'm just wondering whether the OIN is there for the community as a whole to participate in.
Let's see, because I've heard so many things, and so much of it is from long ago, and
sure,
I don't ever know what's right and wrong anymore.
I give legal advice.
Don't kill anyone.
Being a lawyer.
So when we hear that you were actually some insane psycho murderer, it's because you didn't know the right and wrong.
No. You know.
Don't defend your sick actions, Katz.
Yes, this explains the entirety of the installer.
Well, thank you so much for sending us the email and B. Let me just turn that down. And B, giving us a heads up on what was going on.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're actually able to start giving reasons now, because that's been a big question in the Fedora community since January, when we just kind of dropped it in. We're like, hey, it's okay. Here it is.
That's incredible.
And you heard it here first. Anything else.
And it's the first on Lug Radio until we release it on Monday. So brilliant. Thanks again, Jason. And we'll catch
Jeremy.
Up with Jeremy. Going mental. And we'll hook up with
what
you at some point in the future.
What did you have for breakfast?
I had toast.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had a cheese and onion roll.
You need something a little heartier.
I had a large skinny latte.
I know, it's, you know, it's the beard sucks the energy out of me. Yeah. So,
thanks a lot.
See you then, mate.
See you. Catch you in a bit.
Thanks.
Yes, it's the end of the show.
End of the show.
Welcome to the end of the show.
Guess what's next?
It's the end of the show as we know it.
Oh, yes, it's the end of the show as we know it.
And I've got emails.
I've got mail.
I've got wood, actually.
Yes, we saw it.
No, we didn't see it earlier.
What am I saying?
Yes, okay.
Hey, as Jono waved
you've
it around.
You've got mail.
Bing. Doo-doo.
All right, should we begin with the he-mails?
Indeed.
Anyone want to start?
I'll start with an email from Mr. Ben Francis, whose name you may recognise.
Ben Francis. Who is he?
Should I? Did he discover lightning?
I'll just read it. I'd like a concession to Lug Radio Live, please, because I'm bringing a girl. I think this qualifies me for a concession for two reasons.
To be honest with
you,
so
first of all, the two reasons thing, fuck off, right?
I think just because you've met a girl, you get a good concession to Lug Radio Live.
His reason number one is that A, Lug Radio needs more girls.
Yes.
B, the fact that I have a girlfriend means that I can't afford full price tickets.
Yeah, okay. No.
There's a subclause. He says, failing that, she's got really big knockers.
Right, okay.
Did you? I think that's a concession guarantee.
Well, no, I am firmly of the opinion that he should have a concession. The girlfriend, no, full price.
Did you follow that conversation up? Did you read through the rest of the conversation?
No.
Right? Matt sent a reply back saying, okay, we're going to need evidence of the knockers.
Of the knockerdom.
And he sent a photo.
No.
Of his girlfriend's knockers, really?
He sent a photo of his girlfriend with, like, this top-down view of his girlfriend's knockers hanging out. Well, not actually hanging out. And I sent a reply back saying...
That's appalling! You can't do that!
I sent a reply back saying, well, I don't know about you, Matt, but I wasn't quite expecting that, to be honest.
My goodness, does his girlfriend know?
So yeah, concessions to the both of you.
You both get concessions, assuming she doesn't find out about the picture, at which point it'll just be you and you'll be able to afford it.
So go get your ass along to lugradio.org/register and order your concession ticket.
Or you can go over to everybodyloves.me.uk and actually have a look at Laura.
Fantastic, Laura. Lovely, lovely Laura.
Lovely, lovely Laura.
Aquarius.
Another concession request from Simon Smith. He says, can I have a concession to Lug Radio because I'm driving there in a 21-year-old BMW 518. I'm inclined to say anyone who can afford a BMW doesn't need a concession.
But he gets one anyway.
It's 21 years old.
Well, there is that, but it's a 5 series.
Rich kid.
He's only got 1.8 litre engine. You can have a concession.
He was brought up with a silver spoon in his ass. No, sorry, mouth.
No, he brought up with some silver spoon, the sugar, in his ass. He says he's looking forward to the Linux Advocacy Boff.
Yeah,
that's excellent, because AIDS organising the Boff, so that'll be good.
And I will be replying to Boff-type emails shortly.
Boff mail.
Okay.
We've had an email from a certain chap called Bruno Board.
Bruno!
We like Bruno, who's doing a talk at LRL. Hi, guys. When the latest Lug Radio episode, Season 3, Episode 11, was released, as usual, I blogged it on my website and pointed to the fact that Lug Radio Live registration was open.
Hey!
And added that one could ask for a concession if he or she could find a funny / stupid / ridiculous reason for it, from £5 to £3.
Yes.
He says, thus, Master Revelle, in a desperate attempt to write a comment in French on my blog saying, c'est gratuit pour l'encontre français original.
He does keep trying, doesn't he?
Smiley face, French smiley face, got onions around its neck.
He's on a bike, he's got a bear eye.
He's got a stripy top on it. And likes setting off nuclear explosions in certain parts of the sea. this would mean it's free for the genuine French listener.
Well,
it was not that bad, except that the word original is not usually used in that context. Anyway, my question is, what if I want to pay my ticket anyway? I don't want 100% concession. I don't want a £3 ticket. I just want to pay my due. You guys are working hard to get this running. It's obvious that you charge for the venue and everything.
Well,
plane ticket for Lug Radio Live, €350. Lug Radio Live ticket, £5. Listening to Lug Radio, priceless.
We love you, Bruno. Deputy community hero.
Charge you £20 to get in.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who wants to give us free money, we're certainly not going to complain.
No,
but
kudos to him, yeah.
Bruno,
but do let us know if you want to come. I mean, don't just not apply for a concession, because we want to know how many people are coming.
Yeah, I mean, Bruno
Bruno needs to does bear in mind though, he says he doesn't want 100% concession. Presumably we'd have to pay him money because he's not only an international traveller, but he's speaking. And if you come from outside the UK, you get him for nothing. If you're a speaker, you get him for nothing. And if you write us with a region, you get him for £3.
Well, I'm certainly going to be buying that man a pint when he gets over.
Yes,
so,
yes, absolutely. Yep, Bruno, we love you.
And international people, come over. Aid.
Hello, over there.
Hello. 3 feet away.
An Emporium has probably written to me, I think.
An Emporium?
Oh, no, it was Ep E Mortem.
You sound like you're saying something and it's been reversed.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, they've written into show at lugradio.org.
Wow, fancy.
And said, once again, I must say, love the show, keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
I forgot to mention this in my previous email. Have you had any experience or even heard of Linux BIOS?
Yes.
It can be found at linuxbios.org and www.linuxbios.org spells it out, like, phonetically.
Okay.
Have you heard of this, by the way?
No, what is it?
What's it all about?
I can tell, it's open source BIOS. And,
right.
And for those of you who can flash the BIOS...
you can flash this into it? Does it do things that... I don't really understand what BIOSes do.
I read about this.
It's your basic input-out system.
It runs your computer through the POST process.
Right, I mean, every now and again you see someone says, I'm having problems configuring my video driver, and they say, oh, does your BIOS support that? And I think... Oh, I didn't know BIOSes did that. I thought all they did was they knew how to, like, take a character and print it on the screen, and they knew how to talk to a disk drive, vaguely,
you know,
and stuff.
I had a similar thing a while back when I was trying to make my Mythbox a bit quieter, and I was looking through all the documentation control, and I was thinking, how do you do this? Bearing in mind, I'd not really looked at a BIOS since about 1995. and then my brother says, well, look in your BIOS, and it's like a whole world of mystery and wonder. It's like a really shit Disneyland.
Why
there's
are
loads
blue?
Of stuff in there.
Why are BIOS always blue?
I don't know.
He goes on to say, he would like to know where would be the best place to fly into for Lug Radio Live.
Birmingham
International Airport, BHX.
Well, funny you should say that. Christian Schaller sent me an email saying... for international travellers, particularly from Europe, it might be cheaper to fly into
Coventry?
Into Luton.
Luton?
And then get
Luton?
The train.
Luton?
What a nightmare that'd be.
Because Luton counts as a London airport.
And
flights to London airports are a lot cheaper than flights to Birmingham.
But then you've got to get...
And then you get a train, but it when you add the train, because there's a train from Luton, it actually all works out as being a bit cheaper. So
Birmingham International Airport is the best place to fly into.
I mean, if that's the case, Stansted's not that far from Luton and it's massive.
Yeah.
So everyone will let you fly to Stansted. And Heathrow's actually probably just as close to Birmingham, just as close to the Lug Radio Live venue as Stansted and Luton are.
Yeah.
So I'd have a look, to be honest with you. We don't know is the answer.
If you've got any doubt, send us an email. We'll try and help.
He has sent an email.
Look,
so, Jono, try and help. Jono's agreed to try and help
okay.
you there, so look forward to an email from
saying,
Jono.
Thanks again.
Send me an email.
Thanks again for the informative auditory excrement that is Lug Radio, and that's Epimortem. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you very much. There's a chap here. Elliot Frost, who's written to us, says, hello, I'm a young Lug Radio fan trying to learn programming. What do you think is the best way to learn? Are classes profitable, or should you just teach yourself? Now, my view first, I think the absolute best way to learn programming is to pick yourself a project, something that you want to do, and then try and do it in a programming language.
Yeah, but are you going to try and do it after having done some classes on
No, I don't think so.
Or are you going to get a book
Get a couple of books, read some online resources, give it a go. I'm not a great believer in classes.
I think book first... I think classes can be useful.
I thought you meant as in programming classes.
Yeah,
that's what it means.
No, not like a class, like an object, Dick Wade.
That's what I was trying to think.
No, like a lesson.
I suspect that many of the listeners had the same confusion. So if you did have the confusion...
Geeks.
Elliot, I understood it. Everyone who said, should I go to classes? And thought they meant fucking
classes.
Objects. It's just a gimp.
The other thing is, I mean... Look for projects that do have small tasks that you can do. So, for example, with Jacosha, people were saying...
my car needs washing as well.
For example, with Jacosha, people were saying, I want to help out, but I don't know what to help out on. So we created a little category of bite-sized things you can do, and it's really helped people get started with Jacosha. So
did you spell bite-sized with a Y?
No, it's I. Although when I did the first search for it, I put a Y in there.
He says, also, I know you all love Python, which isn't the truth, because A doesn't. But what do you think is the easiest to learn?
Python.
I recommend...
Learn a proper language.
I recommend that you look at Python or Ruby.
to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. Aid thinks that you should learn a proper language like C, and you might want to have a look at that and see whether you prefer it. I mean, there are plenty of resources out there about this kind of thing. Pick up some example code, have a look.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, he says, I would love nothing more than coming to Lug Radio Live. Unfortunately, being 14... and living 6,000 kilometres away in northern Wisconsin.
See, I'm just hearing
excuses. There's not much chance of that. And, you know, that's not a bad point, to be honest with you.
Why don't you get your parent slash guardian slash abuser to send you over here?
Abuser, nice.
Just kidding.
No, I suspect that Elliot would love to be sent over here by his parent slash guardian. And we'd love to have you if you can make it. Otherwise, you know, maybe next year.
Yep.
Maybe next year we'll take Lug Radio Live to you.
Lug Radio Live US.
US edition.
Presumably we'd, you know, cut out some of the swear words and charge people money or something.
We'd have to put a big British flag up as well.
And adverts every 5 seconds.
I'm proud to be English.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, word from our sponsor.
Okay. We've had an email, a very short email from Andrew Mason, who says, the subject is Smurfs. And he says, the Smurfs and Tintin are Belgian.
Hey!
Thanks for that. I'm assuming it was to do with the Belgians. Can I read another one out?
I have a Belgian email.
Oh, go for it.
Okay. Sebastian Samin has written to us.
How many A's has he got in his name? Two.
Okay. They're both next to each other, and that's what I think needs to be pronounced like that. Exactly that, yeah. I am a loyal Belgian listener of Lug Radio.
Fantastic.
Hang on, does that mean he's loyal to Belgium or loyal to Lug Radio?
Well, if you listen, you might find out. As you've probably expected, I'd like to respond to episode 11 now. Do you remember Jono bringing you something up that was Belgian?
Oh, the Belgian kiss.
Yes. First of all, a Belgian kiss involving phlegm really doesn't exist. The guy that told you this probably went home and dropped stone dead from laughing at you.
Thank you.
Secondly...
Plus, the beauty of this, I can't be blamed for this because I wasn't in the episode.
You couldn't be bothered to come, could you?
That's right. I couldn't. And you notice when I'm not here, you're all wrong all the time.
The world was orange from your perspective, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right.
Yeehaw. Second, there are actually a lot of famous people... come from Belgium.
Yeah, there's Hercule Poirot and the guy who makes them swirly buns.
Right, read out the famous list.
Oh, why do they have to have, I don't know, possibly Belgium
go on.
Names?
with the exception of Waffle.
And
go on, read
Adolphe Sachs.
And Sachs invented the saxophone.
He did invent the saxophone.
He's only just famous.
Kim Clitoris. No, not Kim.
No,
Clitoris.
Clidgisters. Tennis, apparently.
Right, no, not famous.
Not
sorry.
Famous. Justin Henin.
Who the fuck is Justin?
Again, tennis. The ball sport thing's just not going to work for me. I don't know anything about sport.
Okay. I mean, if any of these tennis players listen to the show, do write in and tell us that you are famous.
And we won't
Eric
know anything.
Van...
Actually, I bet you that Kimber was the one on the Athena poster scratching her ass, was she?
Okay, go, continue the
Eric
the
Van Looy, L-O-O-Y.
Who?
He's a movie director.
Beard.
Yeah, bubble.
What are you
doing? Fucking bubble, that's what I
mean. He mentioned Barbie Fairytopia.
But not least, Jeannie Deckers, a.k.a. the Singing Nun.
The Singing Nun, really? The Singing Nun was Belgian.
Yeah.
The Singing Nun is about as unfamous as you can be and still be famous.
Apart from this little point, keep up your good work. Sebastian...
Thank you, Sebastian.
Thank you, Sebastian. A mail here from Ronald Ronquist, who says...
is his friend Hamburger,
he's talking about Simon Phipps.
Ronald Ronquist McDonald.
He's complaining about Simon Phipps. He says, but calling Sun in the 80s an open source company is spreading lies. Sun did not care about spreading or promoting source at that time. They cared about selling systems and software for those systems. Okay. They were using BSD because it was the superior Unix flavor at the time. I've been a happy Sun user and customer for more than 20 years. They may be an open source company nowadays. Compare Java and Linux. Both Sun and Mr. Torvalds try to stay in control of their respective babies. Sun is hiding the source, even if it's not kept completely in the dark, and the binaries have to be downloaded under tight control. Yes, I do love to follow your license button has to be pushed before downloading. Linus, on the other hand, is monitoring what going to the official kernel, which can be a limiting factor. But basically, what he's saying is Sun, the open source thing,
we're not
take
sure.
Take it with a little bit of a pinch of salt.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, fair play.
That's a reasonable email.
It's good to hear opposing opinions, especially from a guy who is a Sun user and customer.
What's this
and
guy's
has been
name?
For a long time. Ronald Ronquist.
Ronald, interesting points. Let's hope that Patrick Finch from Sun is listening, and he can send in a response to...
Send an email saying, bugger off, we're really open source, we really are, really no Java.
The one thing I love about Patrick Finch's blog is that at the end of every blog it says, P.S. My views may not represent the views of my employer.
Oh, no, it is.
You might as well just put that in just in the web blogging engine.
But he's a really nice guy, he puts up with a lot of shit from us, along with other people, along with other things, and good one, Pat.
He is a dude. Mabuhay, our native language, pronounced Mabuhay, which means greetings, to the humorous yet sensible guys at Lug Radio. It really is quite amazing and amusing at the same time how seriously fun you guys can be. And your show truly lets me be more closer to the free and open source software community by means of guesting awesome people and updates to what's going on in the community as well. Before anything else, my name is Kevin F. Bahador, and I would like to let you guys know that your show has reached all the way in... Not quite from Chelsea. Has reached all the way in the southeastern Asian country, the Philippines.
Whoa. Nice!
Yeah, quality. The Philippines.
Is he the Filipino guy on the Frapper map? Lugradio.org/map.
Let us know.
If he's not, then you want to have a look at Lugradio.org/map, because I'm sure there is a guy in the Philippines, and the two of you probably will meet up and drink some beer or something.
You can click the Lugradio user group. Listener group. Anyway, he says, having to mention Jacosha as another multi-track recording software like Audacity, my apologies, though, for this might... may not totally be anything with regards to Jacosha or multi-track recording, but I've been recently interested in doing a podcasting show on my own. So I did some experiments, like having one mic only, then recording it in Audacity. I tried like simultaneously using the mic and playing some MP3, blah, 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 blah. And he's trying to get that going with this. He says, is there any way around this issue that I've not read out?
basically, I think Mac OS X and Cubase...
Jono, have you got any recommendations for him?
I'd just say,
Tight for Jono Edit.
Jacosha hopefully is going to solve the problems, but who knows where Jacosha is going to go.
I used its legacy name, didn't I?
It's not called Jono Edit. It's much more than Jono Edit. It's Jacosha. Right. It's its own thing. It's nothing to do with me. It's just partially to do with me. So, yeah, but just plug a mic in, record something, stick it on a website, you're flying. And then hopefully people will listen to you.
Good stuff. So I'm actually out of email, so I'm passing over to my ginger friend.
Oh, he says Maraming Salamapo.
Yes,
I agree. You very much, and God bless. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Email here from Dan Retzlaff, who says, greetings from America. Firstly, before I say anything of substance, I want to say that I absolutely love your show. I sometimes get a little bit embarrassed laughing out loud while listening to it at work during lunch.
Lug Radio Syndrome.
Another bloke saying that he'd love to come to Lug Radio Live and... buy us all a beer, but it's a few thousand miles out of the way.
Send the beer money anyway.
Well, no. Apparently, he'd be happy to fly over if someone would help him out with the cost of a flight. We'd be happy to sell you a ticket if you send us the beer money, so like a postal order or something. That would be lovely.
Does postal order translate, by the way?
I don't know.
I don't think it does.
Okay, right.
It's called a freedom check.
What he's actually writing to say is there's a company named Genesi, or Genesi. It's like Genesis, but without the S on the end.
Right.
That has offices in the US and Europe, and their flagship product is a PowerPC-based open desktop workstation that comes pre-installed with many different versions of Linux.
Ooh.
They do Ubuntu and Gentoo, and the hardware is certified on both of those. They do a fanless HTPC that's built around Myth TV. So, Genesi, I went looking a bit for laptops that were pre-installed with Linux.
I do remember.
And couldn't find any. But there did seem to be a few workstation companies, and obviously this Genesi is one of them.
Excellent. So, good to know about.
So, thank you very much for that. He also says
it's in Europe as well as US.
Apparently, he says so, yeah. Genesi, yep. G-E-N-E-S-I.
Genesis without the S.
Okay, so thank you very much, Dan Retzlaff.
Genesis without Phil Collins. That's what it is.
Genesis without Peter Gabriel, presumably.
One last email, who obviously only gets through because the subject contains the words duck's cock. he says, this is from Sean Cohen, who is known as the Flying Cowman.
And he says, the subject is thank Duck's cock for the internet.
Hey!
He says, guys, broadcast radio here in Australia...
Australia?
...sucks big, hairy balls.
Hey!
In a what? You don't mean... You mean you don't want to listen to this mindless pop shite repeatedly throughout the day, kind of?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
This is what internet radio is for, by the way.
So thanks for the show.
I think he's realised.
He says, I've just finished listening to your
not us, like streaming radio station.
He says, I've just finished listening to your last show, season 3, episode 10.
Ooh.
So it's not the last show.
So he wrote a while back, and we ignored his email.
And I just want to say thanks for the good work. I'd love to come to Lug Radio Live.
Do it.
Come on, we had a guy from Australia last year.
Yeah, get your arse over. And he said,
"Oh, you slack!"
He informed us of the shovel-related deaths in Neighbours. This guy.
Yes.
He said, "And I just want to say, keep up the good work. Oh, I'd love to come to Lug Radio Live, and thanks for the free entry for international guests.
Right.
But I don't think having the $15 is really saving the $15 is really going to help with the other $1 million it costs to fly over.
He's got a point.
To you imperialist bastards.
What does he want us to do?
He says, why
international guests get their flight paid? Come on.
I'll tell you what, right? We'd have a shitload more people coming to Lug Radio Live if we said, you get to fly here for nothing.
Alternatively, we'd live in a wheelie bin. All of us. It'd be like a really shit Morecambe and Wise. We'd all sleep in the same bed in a wheelie bin. He says, why the fuck did you have to send convicts so far away?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Because they're convicts. Hello. He didn't want them around.
He says, oh, well, at least we have actual sand on our beaches. He's right there. They do have actual sand on the beaches. He says, personally, I'm forced to use Windows at work.
We have sand.
I think we have mud disguised
as
sand.
We do not. We have actual sand. Only in a few beaches, but some of them have sand.
Nothing wrong with pebbles?
We've got sand. It's just covered in crisp packets.
And excrement. And oil.
Well, I've got a story about excrement.
No.
Don't want to hear it.
Don't want to hear it. Read the email.
Do you want to hear it?
No.
I'll tell you after this email.
Oh, God.
Personally... But you can't wait, listeners. He says, personally, I'm forced to use Windows at work, and no, I won't use. I won't quit my job in protest because I'm not a complete dick, and I use Linux.
He says, very sensible opinion.
And I use Linux and a Mac at home. I personally felt that the Linux desktop has been there for a few years now. In fact, the more recent GNOME desktop is far more consistent than the arse wank of different themes that have been foisted on Mac users over the last couple of years. He says, at the moment though, we're happy on the Mac, so fuck you all.
And the same back at you.
And he says, fuck you at all points north, which is most of the globe.
Now, excrement.
No, don't want to know. Talk about Lug Radio Live.
Excrement.
This better not be a story about excrement and Lug Radio Live.
The other day, I think you know this already, Aid, but you were having a fag. The other day, I got out of the shower and shit myself. No, I got out the shower and the dogs were upstairs with Susan. And right. Banger was wandering around looking uncomfortable. And Susan said she saw him crouch down and pull a squeezy face and dropped his shit on the floor.
Lovely.
Right? And Susan thought, okay, I best get up and clean that up. So as she sat up, the shit was gone. And little Frankie was walking away, licking his lips.
Oh, no!
Incidentally, listeners, little Frankie is
so
a
your
dog
one
as well.
Your one dog had a crap and the other dog ate it.
Yes.
Is the summary of that story.
And then promptly...
Presumably just like going to go round and round and round the cycle and never re-enter the normal ecosystem.
And then Frankie walked over to Susan and breathed in her face.
Oh, no.
Susan objected and fed him 4 dog breath mints.
I didn't even know you could get dog breath mints. Why do you need them?
Because dogs eat shit.
Dogs eat shit. It's the earlier part of the story, not clear enough.
It's not like you're ever going to be playing tonsil tennis with a dog, is it?
Do you know Banger ate a box of chocolates the other day?
Dogs are meant to die if they do that.
Well, that's the thing. We got him from... We don't know how we got them, right? But Banger looked fat.
He must have fucking... must have fucking sent off for them.
It's a mystery how he would have got them to me as well, John.
Maybe he signed up to chocolates by post. Or, you know, he just went out and bought them from the newsagent, then dragged them back by his fucking teeth.
They were rum truffles, and we got in to see one fat, pissed Banger. And we rung up the vet and said, bring him in and just get him checked out. Took him to the vets, right? And they injected Frankie in the back of the neck and Banger. They said, you know, they're going to be fine.
Is chocolate that fatal to a
dog? Chocolate's well fatal, dog.
Really careful with this because they don't really get too many tricks, but we were pretty freaked out about it, so we took him to the vets immediately, and they were fine. But I said to the vet, Banger's been feeling a bit warm. his temperature feels hot, and the vet
inside
says,
his arse.
And the vet says, okay, we'll take his temperature. I looked at Susan, she looked at me, and the vet unveiled this massive thermometer and this kind of like squeezy thing of lube. You know, dog facial expressions are a rare thing. Banger looked uncomfortable for a few minutes. So the poor dog, right, the poor banger has had a thermometer up his arse and is shit eaten. Welcome to my world.
And next week, listeners, on Dog Radio. No so, yeah. one cares about your dog. Shut up.
Well, you know, it's,
poo
it's always...
Eating pooches.
Eatingpooches.com. / get involved.
Should we possibly talk about Lug Radio Live 2006?
We've not mentioned it yet, have we?
No.
Lug Radio Live 2006.
I believe a certain superstar has confirmed he's going to be here.
He has. Well, it's going to happen on the 22nd and 23rd of July.
It certainly
it's
is.
It's a two-day event this year.
In Wolverhampton.
It's going to be absolutely brilliant. You can
if the proposed growth of dates goes on, does that mean it'll be a three-day event next year?
Well,
5 years' time, it'll be a week.
Maybe it'll be a four-day, and then eight, and then 16.
And then a year.
Powers of two.
Lug Radio Week.
Yeah.
The week.
Actually,
Lugfest.
Actually, a Lug Radio Live 2015, you'll just get a week off in the middle, and the rest of the year will be Lug Radio Live.
Hey.
Which would be a really, really wicked year.
Yeah, and we'll be like Big Brother.
Yep, and the whole population of the Earth will go, which would be good, because that means we'll get enough off-the-door tickets to not have to go to work, the four of us.
No, but the rest of the world are international travellers, so...
No, sure, no, I have to abolish that. Oh, damn. Thought I could get out of a job then.
Here's a suggestion, right? Shut the fuck up. Okay. Okay.
Seconded.
This from a bloke who just spent 10 minutes telling a story about his dog eating shit.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, Lug Radio Live 2006. These are the confirmed... We've just had Mark Shuttleworth, the mighty Ubuntu dude. He's yep. confirmed.
And Simon Phipps is confirmed from Sun as well.
That should be really interesting.
Excellent guy.
So we've got Shuttleworth and Phipps confirmed. We've still got about 9 extra speakers to confirm, so these are by no means finished.
Yeah, we've read out some of the speakers before.
Yep.
That's the lovely Sarah Ewan.
Sarah Ewan. Right, I'll read them out. Say who it is.
Who swears blind she's going to show up this year.
Sony Bird.
Sarah Ewan. It's Linux, Sony and PlayStation. We interviewed her in a show a while back.
Jonathan Riddell.
KDE and Kubuntu.
Christian Schaller.
GStreamer and Fluendo.
And also
OpenOffice and Novell.
Yeah. Michael Meeks.
OpenOffice and Novell.
Gervais Markham.
Jervis Markham, who does Mozilla stuff.
Alex Sudson.
Hula.
Scott James Remnant.
Mike Holder.
Who drops the mic in someone's head. Matthew Garrett.
Who does laptop stuff for Ubuntu and loads of other things as well. He's a nutter and he's a really, really, really good coder.
Barbie.
Who does Perl things Ian for Lynch. Birmingham he Perlmongers.
Ian Lynch, Open Document Blake.
Yep, Open Document... Is he the Open Document Fellowship or the Open Document Foundation or Fellowship. The Open Document something else?
Fellowship and Open Office.
Okay.
Edward Hervey, who's the Pitivy hacker.
Who writes Pitivy, yep.
Martin van der Streek.
Who's Trinax.
Who does
Ubuntu stuff.
We've also got John Leach, who's the king of Everybody Loves Eric Raymond.
Yep.
Hey.
Steve Coast, OpenStreetMap.
We've got Tom Steinberg from My Society, who do write to your MP and things like that in the UK.
The Block Man.
Yes, Matthew Block, King of the World, who runs Bite Mark.
Hang on, how many kings have you had so far?
He's a king of the world. Everyone else is just a king of like GStream or something.
Right. Ewan Spence.
Who's a weird, nutty, very funny Scotsman.
Matthew Block, king of the whatever.
Block?
Ewan Spence, king of the jocks. Martin Vogel.
Vogel.
Rise, Sun Peel!
Mirko Muller.
That's not a real name.
Mirko Muller Rice. He needs to marry Annika Rice.
the Mirko Muller Rice. Who's talking about his new desktop?
His low fat thing.
Low fat thing.
We've got Kat Goodwin, Jen Phillips, and Fated are coming to talk about the women in open source.
Oh, they're talking only to men, though, because there's only going to be 3 women there and they're all going to be on stage at that point. Oh, no, that bloke's bringing his girlfriend. Women, we'd like to hear, you know, some of you come and tell us why it's such a male-dominated event.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's dull to them.
but that's such a massive generalisation. All women don't find it interesting.
This is the man who says that women can't get work in technical
roles. Yeah, Aid Bradshaw.
Well, talk won't be technical, will it? I'm joking, all right?
Back pedal.
I get all my bunnies get stuffed into fucking saucepans and boiled.
special new event at Lug Radio Live 2006. Aid Bradshaw gets burned burned in effigy. Bruno Board.
It's like the bald Wicker Man. Bruno Board, he is the French dude who's coming to talk about how much we swear. Paul Cooper is coming to talk about something. He's not decided yet, but he's my boss at Open Advantage.
Is he not decided yet?
And that's why he gets a stage.
No, it is not.
Yes, beard, yes.
And Elliot Smith is King of Ruby on Rails in the UK.
I do believe some people might take objection to that, but he's very good at Rails.
He's very good at Rails.
Yeah. Ruby!
Now, other things that we're going to be doing. Full exhibition area where we're sorting out loads of exhibitors. Loads of fun. We're going to be having things like the potato stamp.
Got around about twice as much space as we had last year, would you say?
Yeah.
More than that, probably. Yeah.
Separated into about three main areas.
We've got loads of space.
Yeah, we've got loads of space. We've got the mass debate.
So the great and good will battle out your questions. It's going to be grand. We've got boff sessions. Aid, tell us about the boffs.
Silence made.
Aid's put on the boff spot. Boffs.
Boffs. Birds of a feather sessions.
Yes.
Get together and talk about things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're going to just talk.
Yeah. Pick thing. We've already got a few geared up. There's one on Linux advocacy.
Yeah, we've got one on Linux advocacy. There might be one on GNOME customization.
Right.
There's also one on. There's going to be one on Jacosha, as far as I'm aware. There's going to be one on Perl.
Right.
I think Elliot's going to run a Ruby on Rails one.
Yep. So if you've got a thing where you'd like to get together with other like-minded people, then just tell us, and we'll flag it up there so other people will know to go.
For those of you who have already written in and told us, we'll get back to you.
When Abe pulls his finger out of his ass. Of course, there's going to be a live studio recording of Lug Radio.
Using Jacosha!
Hopefully using Jacosha.
That's our goal, by the way. Have Jacosha ready for Lug Radio Live 2006.
Exactly. There's going to be the great Lug Radio bash on the Saturday night. Big party.
We are going to party hearty until the dawn.
There won't be any drink, right?
No, everyone will be drinking Coca-Cola that evening.
My chin. Eat my fully automatic. Have fun and shoot your friends at the LAN gaming area. And there's been talk about maybe a tournament. There's going to be loads of stuff going on. It's going to be grand.
Loads of stuff, yeah.
If you want to go, it's £5 on the day. If you can think
of it. Is that per day, Jono?
No, that's for the entire event. That's the Saturday and the Sunday. Everything, you'd have to pay any more, including the Saturday
apart
night.
Apart from your beer, obviously.
Apart from your drinks and food and stuff.
A fiver in advance or £3 if you can think of any reason at all whatsoever why you should get a concession.
Including your girlfriend having rather large extremities.
Yep, or, you know, the fact that you own a BMW gets you in.
Or your mate's got a square head.
Or your mate's got a square head
from
last year.
Don't forget, international listeners automatically qualify.
Yep.
Or international listeners get in free. They don't even have to do the concession. They get in free. But we'd still like to know that you're coming.
Yeah,
so drop us an email and let us know that
you're
coming.
It's really, really useful if you can let us know that you're coming. There is a thread on the Lug Radio forums saying the big Lug Radio Live who's going thread or something.
Right.
Seriously, go and add yourself. It's just helpful for us for planning.
You can also find out the Lug Radio hotels from there.
You can. There's loads of hotels in
Wolverhampton. No, I've never been on there.
there's loads of hotels in Wolverhampton. Things are getting pretty fucking cool. So
that's lugradio.org/forums.
Lugradio.
No, it's not. It's forums.lugradio.org.
See, I told you I'd never been there.
You spanner. If you want to go and get your tickets, go to lugradio.org/register. And it will be grand.
Yep, Lugradio Live itself is at lugradio.org/live.
Yep. And we've still got more speakers to confirm, more boffs, more exhibitors. There's loads to come, so it's going to be good. Let's go.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you later, Matt.